You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
Hello, my name is Jeff, and I host a show entitled A Matter of Public Records that is broadcast on KBOO the second and fourth Saturdays of every month from 3 to 6 a.m. It is a somewhat eclectic show where the song choices are often instinctual, based on the prior song. Tune in and you might hear some instrumentals, some slightly avant-garde music, punk, post-punk, indie rock, jazz. To my ears, it is a classic late-night radio show. That's A Matter of Public Records, every second and fourth Saturday from 3 to 6 a.m. on KBOO 90.7 FM.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, and broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. I'm missing my co-host, Rachel, this month. Looking forward to hearing and to having her back next month. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today in the studio, I should say on Zoom, is Kyle. And Kyle, I forgot to ask, how do I pronounce your last name?
That's a great question. I get it asked a lot. It's Jacoby, like Jacoby, but with a more intense I at the end.
Got it. Okay. Well, welcome, Kyle. Why don't you start by just telling our listeners a bit about what you do for work and where you work?
Awesome. So thank you very much for having me on. So I am a high school teacher in Wellesley, Massachusetts. It's the place where Wellesley College is, but they also have a high school. And I teach at that high school. I teach right now dominantly psychology. So I have three or four classes of either AP psychology or discovering psychology, the elective, and that's given only to seniors. So it's a lovely opportunity to get to know students as humans and as growing adults and have real conversations about their experiences and where they're going.
Great. Very cool. I was a psychology major and find that subject interesting. And tell us, we always like to hear what inspires folks to become educators. So tell us your story. How did you decide to become an educator?
It's really funny. Every kid, I think when they grow up, they have like the astronaut, the firefighter, the kind of prototypical, in person they feel like they need in their life and they want to be. So really seeing that psychology degree come to work here, I kind of found out that I wanted to be a teacher, broadly an educator, pretty early on. I really enjoyed, in elementary school, opportunities to like present to my class or opportunities to work together with other peers. And I really got a lot of joy from, others learning what I had to share and then also, learning from others, especially people who were not necessarily in inherent positions of authority. Teaching and education always felt like one of the most democratic processes that there could be. And I really am wanted to see that come alive in my future. Now, certainly at the time, I did not articulate it that way. But I think right around like fourth grade or so, I was like, I think I want to be a teacher. And of course, my parents had the first reaction, which was, oh, that's cool. But you realize you're dedicating your life to poverty. And that was the same day that I became a unionist. Oh, well, let's get ourselves out of poverty. So yeah. That's my story.
Were you aware at all of teacher unions before you became one?
I actually was slightly. Okay. My dad is an electrician. And so he, of course, was a member, in and out of the IBEW. I believe he's still a member of the IBEW. Occasionally he's had to work for, you know, non-unionized companies, but I think he always was preferred to have that union card. And so I was always aware of it. And then in high school, I joined the Future Educators Club, which was run by the union president in my high school, and learned a lot about what it meant, not just to be a union, but what it meant to be an educator and teacher. Yeah. And so that was a really, there was some really interesting overlap between the prospect of the discipline that I wanted to go into, as well as being able to determine an individual's worth as well and at the job site, as well as their working conditions.
Okay. Wow. I'd like to hear more about that. But let's talk about your involvement with your local and state union. Just tell us, what your involvement is, and if you hold any elected office or anything like that.
Absolutely. I've been involved with my local pretty much since my second year of teaching. I think the first year in teaching, everyone gets a pass because we're all deers in headlights. but then, you know, after the second year, it's good to not just be, I mean, obviously be a member beforehand, but to maybe like get involved in any way, shape, or form. And so I became a building rep specifically targeted towards non-professional teaching status, aka not non-tenured individuals, and became kind of like a new member, new educator liaison.
Okay.
And I just fell in love with it. It just fell, just completely fell hard and fell in love with it. And then I became, I think through just circumstance, became elected as the secretary for the union. I worked a lot with the healthcare negotiations, which are separate from our collective bargaining negotiations. I know some of our listeners probably, your listeners are probably not not in collective bargaining states. But if you are, you can collectively bargain not just your working conditions, but also your benefits.
Right.
And so I developed a lot of expertise in the benefits arena. Through that expertise, gained a little bit of name recognition. And in 2019, I ran for president of my local and won that election. And I have been president ever since. I kind of joke that I've been kind of a wartime president since I... 2019, fall of 2019 was great. And then spring of 2020, not so great.
Right.
Now just kind of swinging ourselves out of COVID and back into a cycle of things have really, you know, we could talk about that later on in the presentation about like, oh man. but I also became involved more and more with the state affiliate as I became president and needed resources because I am not a lawyer by trade.
Mm-hmm.
I have no education in labor law. I have very little understanding of what it actually takes on the bureaucratic side to really run a union as well. And so I sought help from a lot of incredible individuals in our state affiliate. And eventually, 2 years ago, I found out that there was a body on that affiliate that worked in the political arena.
Mm-hmm.
And got really involved in that, ran for a position on it's called the Candidate Recommendation Committee. So I work, I'm elected to that position as well. So now I serve on a board that endorses candidates for public office in our state,
yep.
It's a small group. And then I ran for the board seat for the state affiliate as well. So I have three, I think, elected offices overall.
Okay.
That's not that brief but extensive story.
Right. All those hats. Yeah, I'm sure it keeps you really busy.
Oh, yeah.
So we met earlier this summer at the annual NEA Representative Assembly. I'm just curious, have you been to some of those previously? How experienced are you in attending those?
I attended the 2019. That was my first representative assembly in Houston, and had a blast. Enjoyed, you know, learning everything you can, and just similar to when you're a first year teacher, you go to the RA and you're just bombarded, deer in headlights sort of feeling. There's so
right.
much going on. It's 8,000 people all shouting into the void, which is pretty great. And then, of course, COVID happened, and I was a delegate for the 2020 RA, which didn't have a lot of business at it, and the 2021 RA, which both of those were remote. And then last year, I was in Chicago for the 2022 RA, and I was recently at the Orlando 2023 RA. So every RA since 2019, I have been a delegate for.
Great. So your proposal, or new business item, as they're called in our, you know, in our secret language sometimes, caught my eye, and right away I was interested in, you know, in meeting you and supporting that NBI. Talk about your decision to write it and what you were hoping to accomplish.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Just for the listeners, like, the NBI is a one-time action that basically these 8,000 people shouting into the void can all shout together and basically, you know, command the board of directors or the president of the NEA to do something. I was sitting in a board meeting of our state affiliate.
Okay.
I can't remember what we were looking for. We were on the NEA website, just poking around for some information. And this big old like thing comes up and it says the NEA Amazon credit card. And I had a moment of pause. And I'm very conscious of your warning to not use explicit language, but there were certain words that came out of my mouth when I saw that. I looked at that. I showed it to my colleague who was an NEA director, who is an NEA director, still is, although they are terming out soon. And I said, "What?" And they said, "What?" because it just doesn't feel right that the NEA, the largest labor union in the country, has made a partnership with one of the largest employers in the country that is so ubiquitous to so many people's lives, but has openly been against collective bargaining rights, collective unionism, anything that would really benefit the labor movement, period. And we can talk all day, and I don't want to talk all day about the working conditions in the Amazon factories or like that, because I know our time is limited. But really just the sense of what am I doing in an organization that has so much power and chooses to work against its fundamental interests? And that's when I really just kind of asked myself, I can't let this stand anymore. I filed an NBI, the new business item, that basically, without getting into too much technical language, would require the board of directors to review all of their contracts for compliance and essentially sever ties from those contracts. Now, I did say voluntary in the event language. I was like, it has to be like a voluntary affiliation with these individuals or a voluntary severance per the board of directors. And I think we'll probably talk about the process of what happened at the RA, but I want to really emphasize that you know, the NBI was written specifically, you know, not to put us in the red, but instead to allow us to look to the future, to live and breathe the labor values that we wanted to see.
Great. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. And just to let our listeners know as well that we do not rely on corporate donations or advertising to fund us. So please go to kboo.fm/give to donate.
Absolutely.
So Kyle, one of the reasons your proposal caught my eye is it fit well with a proposal that I was trying to push, which was a resolution. It's a little different than a new business item. So the process was a little different, but the gist of it was that, like you, I was also seeing some of these promotions for Amazon. Bank of America was also really prominently placed on the website. And so I was really interested in addressing the promotion piece, which to me felt like this is a little bit lower hanging fruit. Like, okay, fine, NEA, if you want to continue to have these working relationships with these, you know, bad corporate entities, then go ahead for now. This resolution is just saying, hey, we're not going to promote that. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to, it's not going to be this quid pro quo sort of, you know, free advertising, so to speak, for the corporations, because of course that's what they're, you know, that's what they're doing it for, any sort of promotion. And of course, if we have a relationship, they're going to find ways to promote, you know, with our members who are utilizing whatever the, you know, the resources are. But let's at least not just put it, plaster it all over websites and on tote bags and things like that. Anyway, for my resolution, some feedback that I got was, hey, we might be able to make this work, but we got to make the language a little more specific, because I used words like support, which can be, you know, interpreted different ways. So I decided to go ahead and go along with that, thinking that, well, I can always bring it back next year if I want to. But talk about what happened with your NBI at the RA. Who was supportive? Who was not supportive? Any surprises there? Just talk about that. Talk us through that. What was the end result? How do you feel about how that all went down?
Absolutely. And again, like you, I was fully aware of the fact that we were deep into this nest of connections with corporate America. And, you know, it's going to take some time to untangle that web. And certainly didn't want to adversely affect members, certainly didn't want to adversely affect the financial solvency of our organization, although I think there is something to be said about kind of a cost-benefit analysis of like what we want to do with who we want to deal with, but that's a separate conversation for a separate day. Yeah. I wrote a couple of things into the NBI that really were trying to be sensitive to that. So again, one was that these were only voluntary relationships. So only ones that the NEA entered into where there were no other opportunities to use, you know, labor supporting organizations, where those organizations wouldn't necessarily be financially, stressful for the overall bottom line of the NEA. And then finally, I didn't see the breaking of a contract that had already been signed as a voluntary dissociation or a compulsory dissociation. Mm-hmm. You know, so when I wrote the NBI, I literally said this on the floor to general counsel, and I got a lot of cheers for bringing general counsel to the mic, not once, but twice, like probably like the lifetime achievement. Yes. I'll never have a better experience at the RA than bringing general counsel to the mic, not once, but twice. It's very rare that we get to see Alice twice. And everyone loves her. But both of our back and forths on the floor of the RA, the general counsel had a different opinion than I did. And again, I'm not a lawyer, but I would not see this NBI as breaking a contractual alignment that already exists. And furthermore, to protect that, you know, I did say by 2025, there was no date. So it wouldn't have to be by January 1st, 2025. It could be by December 31st of 2025. That we, you know, certain contracts certainly are 3 years, and that was kind of stacked out to accommodate that. So I initially had wide support from my state. In fact, we brought this NBI to the state affiliate at the state affiliate's meeting, at our annual meeting in April. And it was voted by 95% of that body of our union, our state affiliate, to bring it to the NEA. And so I felt confident that I could say the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the United Educators of Massachusetts, stand here and are saying, please, please do something about these affiliations. Please begin the conversation. And I had our president, Max Page, and our vice president, Deb McCarthy, right behind me. I had Deb Giswaldo from the Malden Educators Association right next to me as the person who seconded the NBI. And we thought that we really would, you know, be able to show some strength. But I was discouraged to see a significant amount of individual states, you know, throw up these like red flags, red posters. You've seen them before, indicating to their caucus how they're essentially, you know, going to vote on it. Some were very, you know, pro, but a good chunk were con, mainly because I believe they thought that this would force them to disaffiliate from many of their insurance policies and financial policies that NEA has connections with. And again, there was language in the NBI that insulated them from that, but that was not debate that we had a chance to get to on the floor. And without trying to be too cynical, it did feel like in the way that there were many speakers against my NBI, those speakers did not go in to speak against the NBI, but instead to ask questions, and those questions were essentially negatively framed. Yes. And so it did feel like there was a concerted effort, a pre-planned effort, to target the purpose of the purpose and the intent of the NBI directly. I tried to respond as amiably to those questions as I could, and tried to, again, provide my argument. But sadly, there were no speakers in favor that we could actually get to the mics, because questions sort of like, you know, pop up to the front, you know, and go in advance of those speakers. And it was difficult to actually really understand that order. So the bottom line is, after I had proposed the NBI, I was met with several, I would probably call them hostile questions to the intent of the NBI. And then somebody hopped up and motioned to close debate before we had speakers in favor. And sadly, the NBI failed because of that. So, you know, we do like to think of ourselves as a democratic union, and there is a democratic process there. I think it's important to know that sometimes these processes require some gamemanship and some finessing. And I definitely learned that we need to build a bigger and broader coalition to do something bigger and broader in the future.
Yes. Yeah, I think you and I could probably have a much longer conversation about just how democratic the NEA representative assembly always is, but
maybe off air with a beverage, eh?
right. Save it for another time. But yes, it sounds like at the very least, it was a learning experience for you to go through that process. Absolutely. And to see how it all went down. So what, if anything, do you plan to do with your ideas about getting NEA to be more conscious and really take it more seriously doing business with anti-union organizations?
You know, I think as an educator, I lean on my education roots. And so, you know, education is a really powerful tool. Mm-hmm. And so I would love to kind of sit down in the next couple of months and think about how to really educate members in advance of the NBI coming forward. And then subsequently think more about how we build in some scaffolded approaches. I think, as you kind of pointed out, like the resolution is a great start. You know, and anytime you're trying to turn this giant ship of, you know, three million members, it's going to take some time to really turn that ship. And so I think, you know, starting small and building on the wins that we can, you know, develop will, plus the education I think that we want to put forward, will eventually really change some minds. And side note, I'm really hoping that, you know, we work in another space to build our labor movement power to meet the NEA, you know, kind of halfway. You know, if we can build enough power behind Amazon for Amazon to actually unionize and treat their workers fairly, then we might not have a problem. And that's also, you know, a good argument to point out. Like, if we can start using our force for good, and really, you know, try to not just encourage, but demand that the people that we affiliate with start treating workers more fairly and stop promoting anti-union values, that's using our power for good, and we don't have to disaffiliate. We don't want to disaffiliate from, good service providers. And if Amazon does provide a good service for some people, then we should be in a position to encourage them to treat workers, fairly in the system that we need. So that's my 50-foot view plan of what I want to work on. And I think it starts with us having maybe that conversation after this chat.
Yeah. Hey, we just have a couple of minutes left. I'm curious, do you have any other thoughts about the RA and how it went this year, or what it was like for you beyond? I'm sure you were quite focused in on your own NBI, but sort of beyond that, any sort of last thoughts or impressions? Or
There was one moment at the RA where there were some really big ticket items that we wanted to get done. And the membership seeing the clock ticking on our time together and the money that we were spending kind of tick up, essentially voted, and I was not in the green on this one, but voted to bundle anything that was over $100,000 and refer it to, a committee without the consent of those makers and really without any sort of debate on the floor. Mm-hmm. And that was really devastating for me, as thinking about the NEA as a labor and democratic organization, because that nothing about that process was democratic. There was absolutely no consultation with those individuals. Yeah. And those big ticket items were the ones that we, our members, want us to do something about. Climate change, gun control, healthcare.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a full-time development director. This position leads all fundraising campaigns in alignment with KBOO's mission, goals, and policies. The development director works closely with management and staff to identify funding priorities and create major donor campaigns, capital campaigns, and grant writing. More info can be found at kboo.fm/hiring. We will begin reviewing applications on August 7th, and the position will remain open until filled. KBOO is an equal opportunity employer.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime, and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.